Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
There's something wrong with the world today. I don't know what it is. Something's wrong with our eyes. We're seeing things in a different way, and God knows it ain't his. It sure ain't no surprise. Yeah! We're living on the edge.
Does the Agency for Healthcare Administration have any employees that do work for Hope Florida?
Not in the confines of the contract requirements.
What's, I guess, can you, if you're familiar, do you have an understanding of what the relationship between OCHA and Hope Florida is?
Well, at the moment, it has yet to be operationalized.
So, has yet to be operationalized. That's another way of saying, no, I don't have anything for you yet. We're not doing it yet. This became important because as we talked with Alex Andrade on Friday, that's one of the voices you heard. The other voice you heard was Brian Meyer, who's the Deputy Secretary of OCHA. There's a new contract that OCHA has, and part of that contract is a big emphasis on everybody working with and at the direction of and in conjunction with and serving the purposes of Hope Florida. This, what I can only describe as a nebulous agency that has got two parts, because there's the foundation and then there's the active part, and it's sort of a part of all these other different parts of government designed to, in theory anyway, make it so that we can get people off of any kind of government aid. The problem is it hasn't filed its appropriate forms. Well, one or the other of them hasn't filed its appropriate forms. There is not a leader, apparently. They kept asking who's the leader, and nobody seems to be able to know. So there's a massive amount of confusion around the relationship between the government and government agencies like OCHA and DCF and Hope Florida. And then, more specifically, a little easier to get your teeth around is the problem with this $10 million slice of a 67 should have been, wound up being 57 plus 10 settlement that OCHA engaged in with Centene, one of their major providers, over inappropriate payments.
There were some reports recently about OCHA steering $10 million from a settled claim to Hope Florida last October. Do you have any information about what the dispute was or where those funds came from?
So, Chair Andrade, I'm here under the understanding that we were asked to come down in relatively short notice. We found out about this through a public meeting notice. When we inquired of staff as to what the topics were, we were informed that it was related to the new requirements of the SMMC program, lessons learned, data submissions, and then HEDIS. So I'm prepared to speak to those items here.
But I am not here to talk about the thing you want to ask me about.
Mr. Meyer, I believe that this is a valid question to be asked here, especially when in this new contract, Section F of a massive contract is titled Prioritizing Hope Florida, which to my understanding, based on limited information I can get, is simply a nonprofit that has yet to even submit a 990 to the IRS and will provide it upon requests to members of the public who've asked for it. We have no information about Hope Florida, yet in the largest contracts the state executes, the largest bank account the state issues funds from, Section F of a massive contract has a section titled Prioritizing Hope Florida. Are you telling me that OCHA does not have the details about its own interactions with this nonprofit that is such a massive priority in the state's largest contract?
It feels like a trap. It feels like every time I answer or try to answer, it does not get better.
Are plans subject to liquidated damages or sanctions if they don't meet the requirements of Prioritizing Hope Florida?
I don't believe so.
Uh-oh.
Subparagraph H of Section F of the state's largest contract. If the managed care plan fails to comply with the requirements of this section, titled Prioritizing Hope Florida, the managed care plan may be subject to sanctions pursuant to Section 12, sanctions and corrective action plans or liquidated damages pursuant to Section 13, liquidated damages as determined by the agency.
Would you like to revise your former answer, sir? I just read to you from the contract how what you said to me a moment ago was completely false.
But again, I'd say that's a broad comment that is probably attached with every single requirement within the contract.
It's just boilerplate.
Section E.
It's just boilerplate. It's no big deal. It doesn't mean anything.
Requirement within the contract.
It's not attached to Section E immediately before it, titled Prioritizing Florida's Most Vulnerable Citizens.
Oh, no.
I don't have that. I'm not overly familiar with that section.
Well, why would we not sanction a plan that doesn't prioritize Florida's most vulnerable citizens, but penalize them for not prioritizing Hope Florida?
I would have to look at the contract to see what specifically is referenced in that provision.
The contract that you're here to celebrate and tout and tell us why it's awesome. You follow, this one's a little bit more nuanced, okay? What Alex Andrade in this, he's the chair of the healthcare budget subcommittee, which is the largest budget silo in the state budget. And he says, so do you think, is there any penalty for people to not play well with Hope Florida? And, you know, Brian says, no penalty. And then Alex reads him from the actual contract that says there's definitely a penalty. And he says, well, that probably doesn't mean anything. That's just, we just throw that stuff in there all the time. He says, in the prior paragraph to that, where it's dealing with, you know, looking out for the needs of the Floridian citizens, it doesn't carry that. So you can literally fail the citizens and there's no penalty, but if you fail to play with Hope Florida, there's a penalty. So that's not great. So at this point, you start to get like the rescue of the next senior person, right? Because he's the secretary. He's the deputy secretary. So we're going to get the secretary
again,
up
I'd
in here.
I'd say that's a broad comment.
So Siobhan Harris, and you ever watch a conversation turn from bad into outright dumpster fire? That's what happened when Siobhan Harris stepped up. It became so much worse. And if you were watching this, you were kind of thinking that maybe it was just like Alex is a big bad meanie. And then when some of the other members of the committee start jumping in and asking, you know, like the exact same questions, it's bad. And by the way, I have not listened to the entirety of this hearing. It was about 3 hours long. I only got about an hour and a half into it, which I figure was enough for our purposes. And having read some of the articles that have come out since this happened, this is about as bad as it could possibly be. Okay, so here's Siobhan Harris, the secretary of ACA, stepping up to the plate to try to save her subordinates from the grilling.
As far as the role of the agency, health plans have been participating in Hope, Florida.
Secretary Harris, I asked a simple question. Do you have information about the $10 million?
I should explain. She started off answering the very specific question about what were the legal parameters around the lawsuit or the settlement, you know, what was the problem. He just wanted to know the details. And she gives this long, rambling answer about how great Hope Florida is and does all these wonderful things, and which is fine. But you ever have a specific question and somebody tries to give you their long-winded, evasive answer and you're just like, bro, I did not ask for all of this. That's where Alex is at.
About the $10 million that was steered to the DSO of Hope Florida, not even the operational arm, back in October of last year from ACA.
Again, I'm answering that question, Mr. Chair. Health plans have been participating in Hope Florida virtually since its inception.
You're definitely not answering this question. And the more you not answer it, the worse it gets.
I think that that's a mission and a goal that we all support.
Secretary Harris, if you can't answer the question about what dispute resulted in $10 million in taxpayer money being steered to Hope Florida's foundation.
So the dispute specifically, I was trying to lay the context, but the dispute, and it actually was not a dispute. One of our health plans identified that they had paid claims out or hadn't paid claims out in a manner that was meeting the contractual terms and that they owed us money. And so a settlement
owed ACCA money.
They owed the state money.
Okay. And you're familiar with the requirements that when a settlement occurs, what has to be, how that money has to be moved back to general revenue, correct?
Yes, and the monies that were paid to the state were placed in the appropriate trust fund categories.
Okay, that's a very important asterisk that you can barely hear her saying. The money that was sent back to the state was handled appropriately. The problem is you got a $67 million settlement, $10 million of which got sent to Hope, Florida directly and did not come back to the state. That's the problem, and she is going to continue to hang everything on that distinction, because if it had come back to the state, they definitely broke the law. I mean, if it had come back inappropriately and hadn't been managed by the House then or the legislature, that was a problem. But it didn't come back, and she's hoping that that's going to save them on this, okay? This is sort of the beginning of some of the money clips in this. It's a little bit long. It's about a minute and a half. But I want to let you hear it all in context, because it goes from, as I've said, bad to worse to much worse than even that. And given subsequent reporting, even far worse than we thought on the day when this hearing was happening last week.
Okay. I cannot find a record of this $10 million anywhere or when it was transferred to Hope Florida's foundation. Do you have any understanding of when that money was transferred and why? From GR to a DSO for a separate agency.
That's general revenue.
So the settlement agreement was broader. The funds that this that the vendor owed to the estate was returned.
Who was the vendor?
Centene.
Okay. So you ACCA settled a claim with Centene, and normally that money, which would be commingled state GR and federal money, would be returned to ACCA to be properly accounted for and reported, correct?
The monies returned to the state were properly accounted for.
Where?
They were returned to when Centene paid us the monies to the state, owed to the state, per the settlement agreement. Those monies were deposited into trust fund accounts that the department has consistent with statute.
Okay. How did $10 million walk from ACCA's bank account to Hope Florida's DSO last October?
Those funds were never given to the state. They were a direct contribution made from Centene to the foundation.
So you're telling me that there was a settlement with Centene where ACCA required Centene to make a separate payment outside of our accounting processes as part of a settlement with the state to this DSO?
First, I'm not an attorney, and I was not a part of the settlement discussions. However, I know a lot of lawyers were involved in the drafting of the settlement agreement, and I have to believe that all T's were crossed, I's dotted, to ensure the authority was there.
Look, sir, surely you understand. There were a lot of lawyers involved.
I know a lot of lawyers were involved in the drafting of the settlement agreement.
You're a lawyer. You understand that if a lot of lawyers are involved, everything must be fine. I don't even know why you're asking me these questions. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just the head of the agency. And how dare you bring all of this up when a lot of lawyers were involved? Don't you know that when a lot of lawyers are involved, that ends all of the questions and that there's nothing else to be said about the subject? Because
I know a lot of lawyers were involved in the drafting of the settlement agreement.
No. It would have been one thing if she had only said that one time. The lot of lawyers magic wand defense was like four at least different times that she mentioned in the course of the next, say, half hour, 45 minutes of testimony. I have all the clips. It's amazing. Everything must be fine. We have a lot of lawyers. Centene has a lot of lawyers. And the short version of this is, that's state money. You're getting a company to do a settlement with you over a problem, and they're going to pay $67 million, and somebody got them to pay $10 million of that directly to Hope, Florida, and not send it back into the general revenue, not send it back to the state. Well, if a company is engaging in a settlement with the state, then all of that money is supposed to come back to the state. And then the state can decide, okay, we're going to give $10 million to Hope Florida, or we're not. But Hope Florida, which hasn't filed a bunch of its documents, we don't really seem to have much of an idea who's running it or what they even are accomplishing, although we kind of do. And that's all stuff that the legislature is supposed to be overseeing. And as I mentioned, it gets much worse than that because at around the same time that Hope Florida was getting their $10 million, there were two filings for grants for $5 million apiece. And subsequent to that, this is all right before the election, like September of last year. And then in October, it looks like there was, and the reporting on this, I have trouble following the particulars of it. It's either $10 million or $8.5 million. I think it's $8.5 million of that. Winds up going to two different pots of sort of pass-through money that winds up into, allegedly, or at least timing-wise it looks like it, winds up into political action committees that wind up being used to fight against the marijuana initiative in Florida last year. And I'll say this in the most general sense possible. The current Attorney General, James Uthmeyer, who was formerly the Chief of Staff, was at least the key person on one of those. And the questions surround, was he the guy who navigated this sideways $10 million? That's what we're looking at. He hasn't been commenting on this. The governor is acting like you're crazy for asking all of these questions. The person who would normally investigate the impropriety around or possible impropriety around all this would be, you know, the Attorney General. But the Attorney General in his former role as Chief of Staff seems, and also head of one of these, seems to be closely connected to the issue. So what then? Well, it's bad. It's really, really bad. At least it looks really, really bad. 526 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
At Pensacola Christian Academy, your child will thrive in a safe, caring environment designed to build a solid foundation. Kindergartners become confident readers, develop fine motor skills through cursive writing, and sharpen problem-solving skills with engaging hands-on learning. Experience the affordable excellence and unmatched value of Pensacola Christian Academy. Learn more at enrollpca.com/radio.
Oh no, stomach issues again?
Stomach issues?
Who are you?
Your pancreas. I could be the real reason for your diarrhea, gas, bloating, stomach pain, or loose, oily stools.
I thought it was my stomach.
People often do, but any of these symptoms could mean having a condition called exocrine pancreatic insufficiency, or EPI. With EPI, the pancreas doesn't release enough enzymes to break down food, but EPI is manageable. Use the symptom checker on identifyepi.com and speak with your doctor. That's identifyepi.com. Sponsored by AbbVie.
Listen up, Gen Xers. Elizabeth Banks here. The recommended age for pneumococcal pneumonia vaccination has been lowered to 50 and older, even if you're healthy. It's up to us to lead the way. We've done this before. Music videos, fanny packs, even the World Wide Web. So let's do it again and get vaccinated. We're at over 6 times greater risk for pneumococcal pneumonia compared to adults under 50. Gen X, this is our shot. Visit VaxAssist.com to schedule. Sponsored by Pfizer.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9 on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Vincent? Don't change the shirt. It's a nice touch.
On Friday, we talked to Alex Andrade, and he said that there was this $10 million side payment to Hope Florida from Centene, and $57 million went to the state, and it was a big drama. Well, that was like the Wednesday meeting. We talked to him on Friday, and since Friday, the reporting has come out that around the time that this $10 million was going to Hope Florida, that there were two groups that got disbursements, that $5 million from Hope Florida. In total, about $8.5 million went to this PAC that, former chief of staff and now attorney general had. And again, it's the question of, was that exact dollar used in this way? But the money that was in those PACs went to the Republican Party of Florida to buy ads. Some went to DeSantis's PAC. Casey DeSantis, of course, is the chief architect of Hope Florida. So there's a lot of, I wouldn't say we have like the smoking gun pieces, but it looks super bad. maybe a variety of laws may have been broken. So that's where we're at. 529. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Houthi authorities in Yemen say suspected U.S. airstrikes killed at least six and wounded dozens more overnight. The Pentagon has not confirmed the strikes, but the military has carried out some 200 attacks against the Iranian-backed Houthis in just recent weeks. The strikes have targeted Houthi rebels over their attacks on shipping in the waters near the Red Sea. The Houthis have attacked over 100 merchant vessels since 2023. A man's facing attempted murder and arson charges after a fire Sunday at the Pennsylvania governor's mansion. Pennsylvania State Police say firefighters responded to the residence of Governor Josh Shapiro about 2 o'clock that morning. Shapiro and his family were home but were able to escape unharmed.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. I'll say, as I was watching this hearing, it reminded me of, you remember when the university presidents, where the protests were going on and they didn't protect the Jewish students and they came up in front of Congress and they like just could not stop talking themselves into a hole? That's what this reminded me of. It was so bad.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop of the White House, opens its doors to another close ally. Fox's Madeline Rivera has more.
El Salvador's President Nayib Bukele has been a key partner for the Trump administration as they work to remove what they allege are migrant criminals and gang members in the U.S. Last month, more than 200 Venezuelans were sent to a maximum security prison in the country. The legal fight continues over the government's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport some of those migrants.
The U.S. is paying El Salvador $6 million to house what it calls foreign terrorists. Asian markets rallying today. Tensions over trade easing slightly. President Trump said computer chips, smartphones, laptops would be subject to the same high import duties as some other products. The all-women celebrity-filled Blue Origin suborbital flight set for liftoff at 9:30 a.m. Eastern. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 58 degrees in Pensacola. A 45-year-old man was critically hurt in a bicycle crash in Cottage Hill over the weekend. That happened on Saturday on Crowndale Court. The rider reportedly crashed into the side of a truck that had just pulled out from a residence. The bicyclist was taken to Sacred Heart Hospital by helicopter. FHP's investigating that crash, and we don't have a current update on that man's condition today. Pensacola police have a new four-legged officer. Canine Jet has joined the force. He's a 16-month-old Chesapeake Bay Retriever who specializes in explosives detection. Jet was purchased in a partnership with the Pensacola Airport. He'll be on the job there, ensuring the safety of travelers headed to and from the area. PPD says Jet is also the unofficial chief of emotional support for staff and visitors at the airport. Well, a big turnout in downtown Pensacola yesterday for the Fred Levin Way Festival. Now, that event gives back to those in need. There were vendors giving out items such as diapers. There were games for kids to play, and there was even free food being served up by multiple different food vendors. There were booths set up all over Palafox and Government Streets, that whole area. Items were given out by at least 65 different nonprofit organizations, but that wasn't the only big event this weekend. One of the Escambia Sheriff's Foundation's biggest fundraisers of the year is now in the books, the Cops, Cars, and Crawfish event. That was held on Saturday at Five Flags Speedway, and that featured a car show with vintage and new vehicles. Of course, a lot of food. Crawfish was provided by Cubs. That event raises money every year for key Sheriff's Office programs like the Blazer Academy, Dream Big, and the movie nights that they hold. Well, a deputy's hurt from a self-inflicted gunshot wound in Polk County. The sheriff's office there announcing yesterday the deputy had shot herself in the leg while a dog was attacking her in Eloise. Deputies say she was looking for the owner of some runaway cows when a pit bull attacked. She took out her gun and fired at the dog. She apparently hit the dog, but also hit herself in the leg. Another deputy applied a tourniquet to the wound, and she was taken to the hospital. Luckily, they say she avoided hitting a bone or an artery and is currently in stable condition. Well, there's some new life-saving devices on Pensacola Beach. 40 new rescue tubes have been installed. Those were put out by the Gulf Breeze Rotary Club. Those tubes are portable flotation devices. Anybody on shore can quickly grab one and throw it to a struggling swimmer. There were already five on the beach, and seven more have now been installed. And it is 5:34, News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. It is going to be a beautiful sunny day today with temperatures near 78 degrees for your high. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 62. Keeping that nice weather around for your Tuesday with a high near 80 degrees. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 65. Nice and mostly sunny on Wednesday with a high near 75 and a low near 66 degrees. Stay connected, Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Well, thank you very much, Brooke. And right now we've got 58 degrees in Pensacola. It is 52 in Milton. We've got 56 reported in Gulf Breeze. Our next news is at 6 o'clock. We have breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. The Trump administration has announced that electronics will be temporarily exempt from his so-called reciprocal tariffs, including the baseline 10% rate on all countries. Apple CEO Tim Cook must be heaving a sigh of relief. According to an estimate from Evercore ISI, the company manufactures around 80% of iPads and more than half of Mac computers in China. Experts say that despite President Trump's 145% tariff for China, there are very few incentives for Apple to start making its iPhones in the U.S. Trib Live reports it would cost Apple billions of dollars and take several years to build new plants in the U.S. Goldman Sachs is set to report first quarter earnings before the bell this morning. LSEG reports that Wall Street expects earnings per share of $12.35 and revenue of just over $14.8 billion. The company will hold a call with analysts at 9:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Futures are sharply higher after U.S. tech tariff exemptions boosted tech stocks. That's Your Money Now.
The cost of healthcare is all in the news. Hi, I'm Meg, inviting you to tune in today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel as ProHealth will be the guest. They will be discussing the ProHealth Medical Membership Program, as well as an offer of 20 affordable on-site ultrasounds. Find out how ProHealth can help you take out the stress and cost of healthcare on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
June 15th is World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Every year, millions of older adults suffer from abuse, neglect, or exploitation, often in silence. If you suspect elder abuse, report it. One call can make a difference. Contact your local area agency on aging at 1-800-963-5337 or visit elderaffairs.org. Let's protect our elders. See something, say something.
This message is sponsored by the Florida Department of Elder Affairs and the Florida Association of Broadcasters.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are the dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robin Show on News Radio Pensacola, 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
So when you're calling out 10 and 20, is that thruster percentage?
That's the rudder angle.
Oh, okay.
So I'm trying to just gradually bring her around. Yeah, we can bring her up to slow it.
Slow it. Last inch.
Now, what you're hearing is a conversation between Matt Milestrup, who is the harbor pilot for the Port of Pensacola, and me when we got a chance to ride with Matt. And when I say we, John Pickens and I rode with Matt, 2 weeks ago, I guess? About two weeks ago, we rode with him on the Saudi-flagged roll-on-roll-off container ship, Bari Tabuk, captained by a guy from Poland, steered by a guy from Oman, first mated by a guy from the Philippines. Mm-hmm. No, sorry, steered by a guy from the Philippines, first mated by a guy from Oman. And we got to ride with them out, you know, through the channel, out the pass, into the Gulf of Mexico. And
America!
And America. It was really, really, really interesting. I mean, it was so fascinating. And, you know, just to give you a little sense of the ambiance, because, you know, if you've been on a cruise ship, you've kind of, not from the Port of Pensacola, obviously, but you've experienced a little bit of this. It's a little different at some of these other ports, but you probably never have had a chance to be up in, you know, the bridge.
Never, ever.
Up on the bridge and watching this. And, you know, we could walk outside and look around and see it from all directions and look down over the port from, good Lord, 130 feet. I mean, it was amazing.
Starboard 170.
170.
That's
good.
Let's go down
to
minimum ahead,
yeah. So he calls minimum ahead, Captain.
Let's go minimum ahead.
177 now, sir.
And that's when he had called out 170, which is a compass direction, and then, you know, the person who's steering the boat calls back. They've achieved that 170. And, you know, it's funny, John. I heard them happening while we were there, but it wasn't until I was going back and watching the video, which, by the way, the video is now on YouTube. Look for Andrew McKay, or you can on Facebook, either on my page or on the station page. You can watch it for yourself.
You have a YouTube channel?
Yeah.
How did I not
just
know
don't do,
this?
I just don't post very much stuff there. I usually use the YouTube channel to post things that are long.
Oh, okay.
You know, because Facebook doesn't love your long videos unless they're lives. So I just post it on YouTube. And plus, it's got like a more permanent residence there. So anyway, I do very little. Like I do like a YouTube video a year.
Okay.
Maybe. So,
is the YouTube link on the Facebook?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. That's what cool. I've linked it to. Yeah. So,
I didn't know.
No, yeah. You can go find it there. But it's funny because when I'm listening to this yesterday, as I'm watching the video again, and it's about an hour long altogether. The trip itself was what, 2 hours? Maybe something like that.
Give or take. Yeah.
To get all the way out there. You know, and this is everything from us boarding the vessel, walking through the cargo hold, getting up to the bridge, introducing, learning, and then watching as they tug boat and pull away. And we'll talk about all of that throughout the day today. But the one thing that stood out to me was all of the beeping, warning, alarmy type things that were going on, which my brain didn't pay a lot of attention to. But it reminded me of when I got a chance to fly with the Blue Angels. And when you're in the F-18, there's always alarms going off. You know, altitude. You know, it's just always bleep, bleep, bleep. There's always stuff going on. And I remember after I had done it and I came back in the studio and we're playing the clips the following day, Nate Singleton, my producer at the time, was like losing his mind. What are all these alarms for? And I'm like, it's just background noise, man. It's just normal.
It's just there.
You don't need to worry. That doesn't mean a crash is happening. It's fine, you know? But all of those alarms are super, super normal. So anyway, one of the, I don't even know where to start on this, honestly. I have so much to talk about. But this is a 50,000 ton vessel. 50,000 tons. And they run this route around the whole world where they basically come here, they go to Houston, they go to Wilmington, North Carolina, they go to Europe, they go to Asia. When they're coming here, what they're bringing is the components to manufacture the nacelles, you know, the engines, conversion technology, whatever you want to call it, for the windmill components that we assemble up on Scenic. So the port brings them in, they roll off the ship, they truck them up to Scenic, Scenic assembles. They truck them back down, okay, and then they, you know, they go back on a different ship, and then or they get trained over to other places, but they also go back to the ship. And you could actually see at the port, like, all the laydown space was completely occupied with these nacelles. There's no space at the port, not really. Like, they're kind of at capacity. And anyway, but we got a chance to go on there and do that. And one of the things I noticed when we went inside is you walk inside the cargo hold, and it's just equipment everywhere. Like, there's
strapped down, everything. Yeah, straps everywhere.
Barely, and like, you're stepping over the straps. There's not a walkway.
No.
There's not space. And, you know, what often happens on a ship, and those of you who've ever been in, you know, in the Navy, in the Coast Guard, you know, merchant mariner, whatever. If you've ever done anything, you know what I'm talking about. Like, the purpose of the ship is to transport the stuff. The purpose of the ship is not to make it easy for people to walk around in the cargo hold. Well, it's like that. And so everything on a ship is always a danger. You know, walking through the portholes is a danger. You know, walking through the, or the bulkheads, walking through there is a danger. You're going to kick something. You're going to trip. You're going to die. Injuries on a ship are real, you know, all the time. I can't tell you. Probably two or three times when I was on the McCool, I kicked or tripped or fell on things. And I'm like, well, that could have been a trip to the hospital. Because, you know, that's, you're not, the normal world isn't built that way. Inside the cargo hold, there's floor-to-ceiling stuff, and the ceilings move. The entire floor of the next level up is on vertical elevators? I don't know what you'd call them. The central posts inside the cargo hold are not just, like, holding up the roof. They're there. They're the elevator shaft or pole on which the whole floor goes up and down because you have different height cargo. And they want to be able to accommodate so that they can have the maximum storage when they're not just stacking things, you know, 50 feet tall. So that was one thing I had not expected when we got on. Then, you know, we go through the process of departing. Departing was a special nightmare because it was about a 20-knot wind. They call it a south wind. That means it's blowing north. Well, the ship is at the south end of the port trying to go south. So you have this, you know, 40 meters on top of the water ship, so 120-ish feet on top of the ship, on top of the water, that's a giant sail. I mean, this is an enormous sail, and the wind is blowing it into the port. Well, that's fine if you want to stay in the port and do your business, but when you want to leave the port, what do you do? Let's try to push a sail against the wind in 25-knot wind. That's not easy. So so they got a tugboat on the port fore, and they got a tugboat on the port aft pulling. Well, tugboats aren't great at pulling. They got the thrusters they're trying to work with on the side that's on the port, not the port of the left, but the port of Pensacola. And so they're trying to get it off the port, and it's hard. Like, it's they can barely move this giant ship because of the wind. Well, they eventually do move it. They pull it out a little bit. They reposition one of the tugs to push from the back because what they're really trying to do is not just pull it straight off. They're trying to turn it to aim south, so you're turning it counterclockwise. And then eventually they got it to where they could just drive it, where they could, you know, really the boat could operate under its own propulsion and go at about 5 knots. And after that, it was a whole long process. And one of the things that I don't know, John, feel free to jump in here anytime. Oh, I'm just trying to tell the things I saw.
You're doing really good, yeah.
I just, you know, the things I saw. And one of the things I learned, maybe I'm dumb, maybe I'm just an ordinary person, is if you've ever been on a boat, I mean like in just, you know, fishing boat or something, and you're coming into the pass, and you see the lighthouse on the base, what's right in front of the lighthouse? You know those two little rectangular red markers with a white stripe down the middle? There's one that's at water level out in the water, and there's one that's kind of on land back up closer to the lighthouse, a little higher. So that's your channel marker. And you'd say, well, I don't understand. Well, okay, when those are in line with each other, and the lighthouse is, of course, in line with that too, that means when you're coming from the Gulf of Mexico and you're going toward anywhere inside, you're bringing something deep enough that it matters. You want to stay in the channel, you know, red, right, return buoys, green on the left, and you're driving towards the lighthouse, the red markers line up, and because they're, you know, two points, basically, if two points make a line, and so if those are in line with each other, you're in the channel. Now, the buoys will tell you, too, but you don't really see the buoys here pretty close, and especially if it's at night, what do? Well, it's not just one pass. The pass is actually, sorry, it's not just one channel. It's actually four or five. I don't remember. Which one did you count, John? Was it five legs, six legs? There's sections.
I thought there was.
There might be six. Yeah.
Yeah. So because I remember
There's actually the one that's before you get to the lighthouse one. When you're coming in, if you're going in towards the port, there's one coming in from the Gulf, and that's actually a set of green lights that you see. And then there's the one towards the one towards the lighthouse, which is the second one. And then you make a sharp right, and you come across Fort Pickens, very close to Fort Pickens, by the way. The channel in that section of the bay is really close to Fort Pickens. And it's a 33-foot clearance. Or more, but that's like minimum is 33 feet. And we had a 27-foot depth in our ship.
Well, that's what I was about to say. People got to remember it's not just a little, you know, fishing boat we're on. Yes. We're on this huge
50,000 tons.
Yes.
At full capacity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's 33 feet deep, and it's got a 27-foot draft. That's the lowest point. It can be as low as 30 or 31. So when that ship is moving through, you've got... in our case, you had 6 feet, okay? Sometimes you got a foot or two of clearance versus the bottom of the the
right.
bottom of the channel. And you're depending on everybody did their job right, you know, the Coast Guard, the buoy tenders, and the dredging. And it, I mean, it is right, but it's traveling through this cut, you know, think Star Wars, okay? If you could take out all the water... The channel, you know, like the little trough that the X-Wings fly through to destroy. It's like that. There's just a cut in the bottom of the floor of the bay, and we're driving through that, and we're depending on those two lights being in line and these two signs being in line. And then when you make this turn, those two lights behind us being in line. And, I mean, yes, they have, you know, their maps and they have their GPS, and they're very, very, very accurate. But the idea of the way this is all set up is that if you've memorized this, and you have to memorize it to be the harbor pilot, and you can memorize it and then you can see where the buoys are, but you can't always trust the buoys. I mean, you know, there's got to be other elements. You can see where the lights or the signs are. You can navigate your way all the way into the port with a vessel that, you know, is 30 feet deep in a 33-foot trench. It's amazing.
I was just in awe, you know, of how they do it. And it's so just... you know, this, go do, you know, turn this.
Give me 10 degrees port rudder,
yes.
20 degrees port mm-hmm. rudder, 5 degrees port rudder.
And he's also compensating
midships.
For the wind.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. We're dealing in this particular case.
Yes, that day.
He's driving this massive ship through the bay with a very narrow margin of error. You know, when you're in a boat, like you're in a fishing boat, you're in mm-hmm. your pontoon boat or your fish boat or whatever, and you're driving across the water, the buoys for the channel seem miles apart. Like,
yeah,
and you don't even need to be in the path in the channel, right? You don't need to be in the channel because you're 2 or 3 feet of draft or whatever, and so you're not thinking about it much. I'll tell you, when you are in a 50,000-ton vessel, those buoys don't seem that far from the edge of the ship.
They don't.
So there's more between one side of the ship and the other side of the ship by far than there is between the ship and the buoys on either side. So, but I mean, it doesn't have to be much bigger. I mean, this is as big as a thing as comes, but you're watching them do it. And as John said, you're working with, we happen to be in a flood at that moment, which means water's coming in. So water flowing in affects how vessels behave, especially when they're big. The 15 to 20 knot wind with gusts up to 25, that affects how things behave. And right there at the pass, you got to make a pretty sharp 90 degree left turn. So you got to take this giant vessel and you just got to flip it 90 degrees sideways, fighting the tendency of the shoals there, I guess, right at Fort Pickens to try to suck you back in, because there's a kind of a sucking effect that takes place based on how shallow it is there. And it's fine when you've got a, you know, little fishing boat. It's got massive power, no problem. But when you're driving this giant vessel that's got all of these factors... it can be a problem if you get sucked into the, you know, like you don't necessarily have the power to get out of that. And how would you anyway? And meanwhile, don't drift one side or the other. Don't beach it one way or the other.
Yeah.
You know, plan ahead long enough that you're turning this thing with enough preparation to get it in the right position by the time it needs to be going the other. I mean, it's no joke. Very, very, very complicated skilled behavior. And so what I came with, like, you know, big takeaway for me was, they do this all the time like it's no big deal. And it's amazing. It's very slow, but it's amazing slow. John, fair? Was that
yes. Right? Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah,
I'm so. Like, these guys are just amazing at what they do.
Absolutely. And that's everybody. And didn't even tell you the funny part. But we have so much economically that depends on the port.
Right.
And we're not a big port town. Like, our port is, you know, very specialized. There's only one harbor pilot. There's only two tugboats here locally because we only have ever one ship in and out at a time. Like, we might have two, possibly three in the port at a time, but they're here for, you know, periods of days. And so you don't have back and forth traffic like at a Houston or, you know, some other, you know, Mobile or New Orleans, where you have very high activity. We're not like that. But still, it's pretty amazing. I will also say, we'll get to this later, we're going to have the Harbor Pilot on at 7:35, so you'll get to hear from Matt directly. Disembarking.
Oh, boy.
So basically middle-aged, not in the greatest shape, okay, no. Radio guys are climbing down a rope ladder on the side of a 50,000-ton vessel, offloading in 5 to 6 foot seas underway at 10 to 15 knots onto a little tiny harbor boat. A pilot boat.
Little was the key word there, my friend.
And it's bopping up and down on the waves. And at least when he had it for us, it had railings. Apparently, they didn't always have the railings.
I would have fell in at that point because that's what I grabbed.
I have, it's been a while in my life since I did something where I literally thought, could be dying right here. I hope I don't. I don't want to, you know.
I had my hand so close to that cord. Because if I'm going
over
on
your
life
jacket. Yeah.
If I'm going over, that thing's coming down.
Because if you hit your head, you can't pull at that point.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah, no, I'm with you. And you know, I watched you come down, and I'm like,
we
lived.
I watched you come down first.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, baby, Lord. I know where I'm going, you know, but
I had the advantage of not really seeing anybody do it exactly.
Right.
And so I didn't, all I knew was when I looked over the edge, I thought, oh, that's a ways.
Yes.
That's not what I was expecting. Anyway, we'll talk more about this later. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
Marcus Point Baptist Church encourages you to invite a friend to the community sunrise service inside Blue Wahoo Stadium. Reach out to your neighbors, coworkers, or even family members and show them an Easter tradition like never before. The Community Sunrise Service, Easter Sunday at 6 a.m. from Blue Wahoo Stadium. Visit our website at PensacolaChurch.org.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Join the Pensacola Expert Panel Wednesday at 10:30 as Bess Marks from Lazy Boy joins the show, talking about upcoming events at all three Gulf Coast locations, Pensacola, Spanish Fort, and Mobile, how to incorporate Lazy Boy's free in-home design service with recliners, sofas, accessories, and artwork to make your home look just like a picture out of a magazine.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
I want Roy to go up here at once.
We will not survive this.
Good morning, 5:57 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. At least 34 people have died after a Russian ballistic missile strike Sunday in Ukraine. The missiles hit the center of Sumy, a city in the northern part of the country. About 120 people were injured. An all-female crew of celebrities is headed to space on the next Blue Origin flight that launches today. Pop star Katy Perry, the host of CBS Morning's Gayle King, are among that crew. They're joined by Jeff Bezos' fiance and journalist Lauren Sanchez, NASA rocket scientist Aisha Bowe, research scientist Amanda Nguyen, and movie producer Carrie-Anne Flynn. President Trump is pushing for the FCC to give CBS the maximum fines and punishment for a 60 Minutes broadcast. This is according to the Huffington Post. The president is not happy over a 60 Minutes broadcast on Sunday about Greenland and their opposition to becoming part of the U.S.
Yeah, it's definitely where the president of the United States should be, is watching news programs and threatening legal action against them for the content of their First Amendment protected content, their speech. Yeah, that's good. That's where the president definitely should be. All right, David, thanks so much for the good word. Now, I thought you had an interesting case to be made about the interview with Kamala Harris, where they protected her from the embarrassing word salad in the run-up to the election. But, I mean, at the same time, this is all the time. You know, go back to when you had the Benghazi attack and you had Susan Rice goes on all five networks and lies. I mean, you know, that was a couple of months before the election, right? The attacks were on September 11th, right? So that was a couple of months before the election. And no consequence. May have swayed the election, or at least, you know, dodged a problem for Obama, for sure. Is there any consequence to that? Well, I mean, no, not really. But you wonder, could something ever happen that would bring accountability to, well, news organizations, maybe? Probably not.